Thanks, you guys. So I do want to just take a moment and let you know a little bit about things at Mount Carmel. Frank asked me to do that. And I do want to thank you as a congregation. One of the things you've done is freed up Frank the last 2.5 years to be involved at Carmel. This year and last year teaching theology. Previous to that, doing Old Testament for me and leading the school while I was away. So I'm grateful for that, and we are grateful for that. I sat yesterday with Mount Carmel's board. Mount Carmel's board the full board meets twice annually, and so we had our meeting yesterday, and I'm reminded that it takes a lot of people involved in many different ways to shape student lives. I sat with 15 other people from around the province, and I'm reminded of the effort they put in and the wisdom they give, and that then channels into what staff do, and from there it's like it comes to a funnel and hopefully it goes out to these guys. These are 10 of the 31 students that are at Mount Carmel this year, and during the year we have wanted to take the wisdom of the Word, the wisdom of God's people, pass it into them, and then have them leave and go and live. And go and bring the goodness of God, the love of God to the world around them. And so that's Mount Carmel's working to shape disciples, to shape people who will follow Jesus, be responsive to Jesus, and bring his goodness to the world. And so that's what Mount Carmel is, and it takes a lot of people, and you have a history as a congregation of being involved with us and of supporting, encouraging, and affirming what we're doing. And so I thank you. And these students, without knowing it, are a beneficiary of what you as a congregation have done for many years. So thank you for that. Mount Carmel continues to always depend on God's people for two primary things that we see ourselves constantly depending on. One is students. It's always an issue. We are no name in a brand name world, is my way of saying it. We're a small school in a world of bigger schools that can very easily kind of just overwhelm us in terms of publicity and knowledge. And we're not a long program, so students are only with us 1 year. For a lot of reasons, we can just kind of get lost in people's minds. And so we're always aware that we need to keep our names in front of others. And so we are always looking for students, and that's an issue. The second issue for us is always finances. We depend on God's people to support us. Students pay about 1/3 the cost of their education. That's a decision that was made a long time ago. But their tuition fees and stuff cover about 1/3, so we're depending on donations from people to cover 2/3 of what it costs. And so, you know, I'm glad that in a week, next Saturday, we have graduation, and we'll have 31 more people who are going to be a part of that group that supports what we do. And so you guys move now from takers to givers. I'm just reminding you, I just want you to know that. but we are always dependent on that, and currently are a little bit tight finances, and that hasn't been the recent history of Mount Carmel. We have had very good support and have been very grateful to consistently be able to meet all our obligations for the last 6 or 7 years. And so while we're still able to do that, we are really tight. So that's sort of Mount Carmel. I am happy to talk about Mount Carmel all the time, and so come talk to me after. I can fill you in more. The other morning, I jumped on my bike to go to work, and I went from the back of my house to the front of my house on a little sidewalk beside my house, and as I came around the corner, I noticed that the gate, the chain link fence gate, was only halfway open, and I expected it to be fully open, but it was halfway across the sidewalk, leaving an opening about this wide, and a little voice in my head said, "You can get through there." And the little voice in my head, of course, was wrong. And on the gate, there was this big bolt, and on my arm, I've got this nasty, nasty bruise. You are laughing too loud, boy. Because the little voice in me head was wrong. And I chose to listen to it. Boxing Day, I was with my family, and my family has a tradition of doing activities, and this is my big family, 50 of us or so, and the activity this year was a sledding hill that had been previously prepared, which involved about a 20-foot jump of very high proportions and very long distance. And I had a 50-year-old brother-in-law who decided he could do this. And he had voices from his 25-year-old son saying, "Don't do this." He had voices from us saying, the rest of us saying, "We've known you've been an idiot for a long time. Don't do this." He chose not to listen to the voices. We kept talking for a long time after while he was recovering. But we're always choosing to listen what voices we're going to listen to. Because there's always voices talking. There's always voices. Research says that the average urban dweller in North America sees 2,000 to 2,500 advertising images a day. I can't believe that's true. 2,000 to 2,500. So, you know, the bus goes by and it's got a board on it. You're catching images all the time as you drive on billboards. Okay, so it's not true. So you only see 1,000 images a day. So? We are inundated with these voices. And some of them are loud and some of them are quiet. And we're always choosing who we're going to listen to. A couple years ago, I will never forget the first time I walked through a public market in Ndola, Zambia. And it was middle of the week in just an average city, not a lot of white people around. Shauna and myself, our three kids, are walking through this market, and we're obviously different. And we don't speak the language, but lots of them have a little bit of English. And they're calling to us. And they're saying, "Come for me, come to me, buy beans, buy whatever." And it's loud, and we are obviously the center of attention. And we would walk up and down the rows, and it was a huge market. And it was this very awkward moment of saying, "I have no clue who to listen to." I sometimes picture life like that. It's as if I go through this marketplace and all these voices are calling, saying, "Hey, come live life my way. Come, and I will show you what matters. Come, and I will show you what your priorities should be. Come, and I will give you the way." And off in the corner of this loud and overwhelming marketplace of life stands a quiet, unassuming figure who just very simply says, "Come to me, and I will give you rest." But there's no pressure. There's simply an invitation. And every day, I choose what voice I listen to. And I stop, I can stop, responding to all the images in my world and come back to the simple, quiet voice and learn to live life in the way of Jesus. And so I'm always choosing that. Join me in Matthew chapter 11. Matthew chapter 11 contains this great invitation, the quiet, unassuming voice of Jesus in the marketplace of life, saying, "Come to me." It starts with John the Baptist wondering if he should still be listening to Jesus. And I'm just going to very briefly give you the overview of chapter 11 here. John the Baptist has been announcing, proclaiming the coming one, and he gets looking and watching Jesus from a distance and says, I don't know. I think he's the one. But he sends his disciples to Jesus and says, "Are you really the one?" And look at the evidence. Look at the changes coming to the lives of people. And so on one level, John's confused because he doesn't necessarily know that Jesus is fitting into his expectations, but Jesus says, "Look how living in consort with me, how living together with me is changing these people's lives." And then in verses 16 to 19, Jesus goes on to point out to the people after dealing with John's question. He says, you know, you guys, you always want people who do what you want. In a sense, you want to hear people who say what you want to hear. That's not exactly what Jesus says, but that's the idea. John the Baptist came along, and you are way too strict for us. I come along, and you say, oh, man, you are just goofing off and partying all the time. What do you guys want? And so Jesus pushes back against them and says, you only want to hear what you want to hear, and you critique everything. And then we move to verse 25. Jesus, after saying, you critique everything, you're against whatever you don't want, you just want to hear your own things, says, you know, God is the God of the common people. At that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord, earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this was your. All things have me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Jesus has been critiquing his critics, and now he praises the God of the common person. You don't hold your truth for just the really wise and the really intelligent and the really fervent who chase hard. Your truth is available to the little children. In fact, Jesus says you kind of hide your way from the self-described wise and learned. They don't kind of step into God's way. And it's as if God's truth doesn't fit in with the upright and the uptight, the altogether and all-consumed people. God's ways, these things, I praise you because you've hidden these things, God truth, from the altogether people, and you've revealed them to little kids. See, sometimes we like to have kind of adult taste buds. We like to have sort of really focused and special truth, things that we understand. And we kind of get enamored with the conflicts of theology and stuff. It's like we develop adult taste buds. We become sort of into these acquired tastes, and we want to wrestle with truth. And Jesus says, you know, God's truth is pretty simple. God gives truth to kids. In Vancouver, there's this great ice cream shop called La Casa Gelato. La Casa Gelato has 218 flavors on the floor. Some of them are great. Some of them are strawberry. And some of them are bubblegum. And some of them are garlic, balsamic vinegar, durian, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Some of them are acquired tastes. Balsamic vinegar is actually really good ice cream. But it's not strawberry. And there's people who go to Casa Gelato and say, I want jalapeno, wild berry jalapeno. And wild berry jalapeno is exactly what you think it is. It's this great berry flavor that then bites you and drives you to your knees. But I get acquired taste buds and I want cool stuff. And Jesus says, you know, God's truth comes in strawberry. It's not for the special. It's simple. But we sometimes want special and we overlook the basic. And Jesus here, after critiquing them, just says, you know, God's truth is for all people. And then he says, verse 27, God gives truth to those who want it. God's things are available. Jesus has been given all things. And so the conclusion of verse 27 is, come to me. No one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. God's things are available. They're all available in Jesus. And so the implication is, come to me. And then that, of course, becomes the invitation of verses 28 and 30. And we're so familiar with these words, but I want you just for 5 minutes or so to think about them in a fresh way. Come to me, all you who are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus is standing off in the corner of this marketplace of life, saying, you know, I've got a different way to live. I've got some life tricks that'll help you out. And it's simple stuff. It's not some fancy formula. It's come and learn to live life from me. I remember my father, who grew up farming with animals, talking about training horses. When they trained horses to work in a team in the fields, they would take an older horse who was slow and steady, and they would yoke that horse together with a young, energetic, enthusiastic, stupid horse. And they'd put them in as partners, and the energy of the young would spill over to the steady. Ah, but the dependability of the steady would shape that young horse and teach that horse how to live. Jesus stands in the corner of life and says, come, take my yoke on you. Partner yourself with me and learn to live life with me. Learn to walk my way. Come and walk with me. And it's the exact imagery of a farm animal being hooked together and saying, come. You see, Bob Dylan said, long after Jesus said it, but Bob Dylan said, you got to serve somebody. And we're always deciding who we're going to serve, who we're going to hook up with, who we're going to learn to live life from, what voice I'm going to listen to. And Jesus simply says, come and learn from me, and I will give you rest. How do I learn from you, Jesus? You take my yoke. You hook yourself up with me, and you learn to walk in step with me. So the Apostle Paul, many years later, says, keep in step with the Spirit. Walk in the way of Jesus. And Jesus' invitation here is to come and find rest. You see, we live in this burdened world. They lived in a burdened world. They lived in a world with religious expectation and obligation, 619 laws to keep you from breaking the Ten Commandments, and all these things they had to do. And Jesus says, come and just learn from me. And I live in this world of expectation and obligation and pressure and demands, where I feel like I have to keep people happy, and you feel like you have to do what's expected of you, and we're always concerned about what others are thinking of us, and how does God really feel about me? And this pressure comes, and we start to feel like this car, that we're just way overloaded and not able to handle, and it's just not going to work, and it's just not going that good. And it wasn't made for this. And into that kind of pressure comes this voice whispering, rest. Jesus says, come to me. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. Come and I'll change your load. I'll take the demands that you've placed, that culture places, that others place on you, and I'll give you what you were made for. Come and walk with me. Learn to live life my way. And it's not just immediate burden relief that, oh, I'll take all the pressure off you and you'll just live whatever you want. No, no. Come and care about the things I care about. Hook yourself up with me and walk life with me. Why should I learn from Jesus? Why should I hook up with him? Because I, he says, am gentle. And I'm humble in heart. I have nothing to prove. I have nothing I have to accomplish through you. I am here for you. And I know how you work. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. And to the person loaded down with the cares of life, Jesus says, I have a load that will fit you. I remember my youngest child, Jelena, was 2. We decided to do this spontaneous family hike one day that wasn't planned and we weren't equipped for it. And this hike involved about 6 kilometers uphill to Lillian Lake in the Kananaskis world. And this was not a fun time for me because I was not equipped to get a 2-year-old up a 6-kilometer hill because I had to carry her. And I'll never forget thinking, how can a 2-year-old weigh so stinking much? And I wasn't equipped to do it. But now I could easily get a 9-year-old up there because she's equipped to do it. She's able, and it's a different game. Well, so often we're taking all these burdens that we're just not equipped to handle, and Jesus comes and says, learn to live life from me. And the invitation of this passage isn't just to come and believe in Jesus. Oh, that's the starting point. But it's to learn to walk in step with him. Take my yoke, hook up with me, learn what I care about, learn to walk with me, and you'll find rest for your souls. I can listen to the voice of a culture that says, get, gather, accumulate. Or I can listen to the voice of Jesus that says, give. I can listen to a voice of a culture that says, conquer, prove yourself, accomplish. Or I can listen to a voice of Jesus that says, suffer, sacrifice. I can listen to the voice of a culture that says, take care of yourself, protect yourself, look out for number one. Or I can listen to a voice of Jesus that says, deny yourself. And in the marketplace of life, Jesus stands in the corner and says, come and learn. Take my yoke and walk with me. And I love how Eugene Peterson paraphrased this in The Message, where he says, I might need to pull it up because I can't see that. And I can't find it on my notes, so I don't know what I mean. Is it there now? Are you tired? Worn out? Burned out on religion? Come to me. Can you get me the next? There we go. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Yoke with me. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. What you're made for. Come and learn the unforced rhythms of grace. So in the marketplace of life, all these voices call to me and say, live this way. The 2,000 images I supposedly see a day say, here's what you need. And off in a quiet corner is Jesus saying, come, take my yoke. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. And so again, the invitation comes to us to not only identify with Jesus, but to walk with Jesus, to learn to value and care for the things he values and cares for, to walk with him and learn the unforced rhythms of grace. And so enable, empower you and me to walk and learn to live in pace with the Creator of the universe. Let's pray. Father, on this day, we so easily get pulled by all these voices, and they're always calling. May we be soft to your voice, soft to you. May we respond and learn to walk in unison with you, I pray. Amen. Frank's coming back.